Welcome to the 13th episode of our podcast, Up on Foil, where we talk all about foiling. And today we have a super special guest. It's Luke Moore. He's a podcaster. And on the website, it says that you're an entrepreneur, an adventurer, and an athlete. And you've actually, you're not only a fellow foiler, but you've been with me on my commute. You've been with me when washing the dishes. So I've listened to your podcast a lot. And that's super interesting. You had a super dangerous accident, what I heard from an episode. Maybe you can address that later on. And I'm super excited to talk with you. Thank you for being on the show. Do you have anything to add? Did I forget anything important?
Not that I know of, but thank you very much, guys, for having me on. It's an honor to come on and be on the other side of the fence. It's pretty cool.
Have you ever been on the other side of the fence before?
No, not yet.
That's crazy.
So that's super cool. We're gonna learn something today.
And just like it's the first time for us to record a podcast with a proper podcaster.
You're in La Ventana, right? In Mexico, Baja California.
It's my first time being on somebody else's show, and I think that's a pretty exciting opportunity to kind of talk on this side. I had a couple guys on from Maui and stuff or Hawaii that have different podcasts, and it's always interesting being on the other side. But yes, currently in Mexico, it's our second season here. I came out last year just for fun because I had some friends, and obviously it's a good win scene. But yeah, so internet got upgraded so I can actually record from here, which was pretty exciting.
Your internet is probably better than ours, so let's just hope that the connection stays strong.
That's true.
If we get into that wing life, it's like a work-life thing, balance, I think, the name? Or how did you come up with the name?
It all stems back to like how I found wind and in my motorcycle accident and kind of all those life changes that happened through that kind of crazy accident. The reason we started the podcast is we had so much passion. Obviously, four of us on the team right now are quite passionate about living a lifestyle that is more conducive to a bit of freedom, connected to nature, connected to community. And I guess the title kind of just made sense for us. It was like, well, we love winging, windsurfing, kiting, foiling, everything. And then the lifestyle attached to it is what kind of drew us all together. Frank was actually the first contributor to our podcast. he donated like $40 early on. It was like, bro. So I messaged him and said, hey, like, do you want a job? That's how this whole thing started. But the wing life is kind of, it's that. It's trying to help people and ourselves just kind of reconnect, not only with ourselves, but with the community at large that I think a lot of us are missing, living a more isolated lifestyle. So that's kind of how that whole thing came to be.
And your lifestyle is pretty special. As you said, you're in Mexico right now. I've heard from your podcast, correct me if I'm wrong, you're half a year in Canada or somewhere else, and now half a year in Mexico. That sounds amazing. Just endless summer. But that needs to be financed. How does that work?
Yeah, I was obviously in an 8-year accident ordeal with insurance and everything. So what happens through there is I was able to acquire a rental property after my accident. I was very, very smart with my finances as much as I could, hopped into a little bit of investing and lived an extremely frugal lifestyle. So with that, I was always trying to come up with new businesses and new business ideas to create a little bit of a passive income and then take that passive income to do things. So like it is possible to do something like this. You just have to be careful of where you spend your money and learn a bit about investing. Real estate investing has been something that's been a gift, definitely a gift. Things are getting a bit more expensive now, but our whole family got into it. We built renovated two homes and did the best that we could to kind of set off. While some friends were making fun of us and while some friends were partying, we were working 14, 16 hour days just to make sure that we could set ourselves up a little bit later. And then eventually, as the years go on, this actually becomes real. It wasn't real before. I could have come for a short period of time. But now that we're putting in, like everybody, all of our family put in so much work to be able to, A, work remotely, which is what I continue to do, but then at least do it so that we can enjoy it for a longer period of time. So
beautiful. Absolutely. I agree with this mindset.
It's a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah. And do you want to talk a little bit about this accident quickly, if you don't mind?
Sure. Yeah. I'd always been a dream of mine to own a motorcycle. So for my birthday, I think my 25th or 26th birthday, even though it wasn't a smart financial move, I just went ahead and bought myself a brand new $20,000 Honda, what was it, 600RR, matte black, custom everything, right? And I was like, forget it. This is it. My current lifestyle does not. I didn't have. Like I didn't, I hadn't found Wynn yet. I wasn't into swimming. I didn't do anything that kind of related. I was more into the corporate side of things, corporate trainer. So I was very disconnected from how I grew up, and I guess I wasn't as happy as I would have wanted to be at that point. So this motorcycle kind of filled that void, for a little bit, and then I got into some track racing, which was actually my most fun part about that. And it was a community. So every time you would drive by on the road, people would wave at you, which I thought was amazing. And
That's
that's the
super
one
cool.
thing I missed. So, anyways, I was on my way to work one day and a guy made a mistake. And he just parked his truck across a roadway. I crested a hill and he was just blocking the whole road. So I had no chance of getting around him. So obviously, I don't remember much through amnesia, but yeah, I broke my pelvis, severe brain injury, internal bleeding, about 80 other injuries. So it took about, yeah, I think I was rehabbing for around, I don't know, about 8 years through that. It took about 3 months to take my first baby steps, and about another 2 months after that to wean off crutches. So 5 or 6 months. And then it took about 2 or 3 years, I think, before I could jog pain free. And then from there, I'm just rebuilding a strength phase now at the gym, which I hadn't really done before. So now I'm back up to deadlifting 225 for eight and doing some heavier lifts and some different things to test out my body. But I was pretty upset at the start that I was on crutches for 6 weeks. And then the orthopedic surgeon that saw me showed me my brain scan, and then he showed me my other scan. He said, normally people die because of this and they die because of this. Like just enjoy the crutches for now. So I was like, okay, fine. So through that accident, we attacked it as a full-time job. I closed down the company that I was running. It was so severe that I didn't know how it would end up. So we approached it with holistic medicine. We approached it with traditional medicine. We did absolutely everything possible to give me the best chance of recovery. And it was a pretty miraculous. It was the most work I've ever done on something. Like I had just finished up a bike trip across Canada the year before, so I'd cycled 6,000 kilometers on a whim with a buddy of mine. And so when the accident came, I just had to lie there and then use whatever means possible through meditation, through anything, to get myself better. So that's what we kind of did. But I put in 6, 7 hours a day of rehab for years to get myself back. Yeah.
Do you think that's what you had to go through, like this meditation, this patience, this dedication, had influence over you building businesses and investing over the next years?
It was a weird thing when I was going through the accident or the rehab. It almost felt like I had. Which doesn't make any sense, but it felt like I had done something of this magnitude before. It also felt like it was the first time in my life that this was something that was extremely valuable and powerful, and this is something that I could devote my whole energy to, which was amazing. And then I had a right hemisphere brain experience because of my head injury. The talking part of my brain, normally the part of our brain that tells us we can't do stuff or that we're not good enough or that gets in the way, slowed down. So I was able to stay focused on task and epiphanies would fly in. So when I was lying there doing some rehab exercises, I would get an epiphany of something that I didn't know existed. So it's like Feldenkrais, it's a therapy that I didn't know existed, but I would start doing it. And I was like, I wonder if this exists already. And then you go on Google and start doing a bit of research and it's, oh, some physicist created this then. And so that's the journey of discovery that I went through. I tried not to read other people's work. Because I was trying to enjoy the experience as much as I could because I had support around me that took care of my basic needs. So when you get out of that, you find that there's such a connection with yourself. And then my brother had just started windsurfing. So like I would tag along and be his caddy and stuff. And eventually I said, well, maybe if I work hard enough, I'll be able to do this one day. So that's kind of how that whole journey melded with windsurfing. And then I would go to the beach for 6 to 8 hours, 3 or so years in, and just lift my sail and just try stuff. And then go to physio after. And she was like, why are you sore? I said, well, you know, just walking around. Because I had to, the only way you can eventually get back to 100% is to slowly, like scientifically break down your body into components and slowly start to stress those components over. Like I went to school for kinesiology and for health sciences. So it was like, eventually I'm going to have to push my low back to see if it can handle a bit of load, because walking around and doing these little exercises of physio ain't going to do it. So that's how I slowly, windsurfing in essence, polished off my my rehab to get me back to where I was. And from that point, then I started including more weights and more different things. And so yeah, it was a crazy, crazy time in my life for sure.
And now is that over, or are there some situation where you still like have either a like flashback where you think about that, or maybe also some physical problems?
To be honest, it was such if you're not talking about dealing with insurance and like all the legal stuff and all that, that was extremely traumatizing to say the least. But the accident itself, I don't know, it was such a beautiful experience to be able to disconnect from, like, here's how we kind of did it though. Like, and I've talked to a few friends who have gone through something like that. And Brendan Scheid, who had that paragliding accident in Hood River, like we had the same kind of mindset. You're at point A and you want to get to point B, but at that point in time, you just solidify your point B. And then regardless of what happens throughout your journey, you try to enjoy it as much as you can with emotional and family support. If we were able to do that through any kind of situation in life, you would actually enjoy the hardships, the good and the bad, because you look at it as a form of a movie and not as a form of real life. So it's a game that you play with your own mind, where you trick it into thinking that like your destination is where you're heading regardless of what happens. There is no there's no chance of failure. So when you look at it that way, even if you do fail, then you've tried your absolute hardest and you can accept that at the end. But when I talked to psychologists that I had to go see, they always tried to trick me into thinking otherwise. But it's like, no, like when I get here, I'll be able to do X, Y, Z. So it's for that kind of thing. I think the brain injury helped, because I was able to get into those mind states easier than otherwise. The quietness in my mind lasted 3 months, right? Where I could just focus on like unwaveringly and everything, but I think it had set some paths in me to be able to continue going on.
But then it wasn't over. I'm not sure if I read it somewhere or I've heard it.
So no pain now. Like I haven't gotten any pain. They said I would, like I had 4 or 5 physiatrists said I would have chronic pain for life. I never believed in chronic pain for myself. I know some people have it, but I assumed that it was because my system was not intelligent enough to pick up what was causing the pain. So it was like, let's upgrade my body awareness through somatics, through Feldenkrais, through different kind of therapies, through anything to build the awareness of this system. I refer to it as like a computer. So it's like when back in the 90s or back in the 2000s, you had errors all the time. But now AI is so sophisticated that it'll reroute itself. So I was like, A, cells regenerate every single day. So why can't mine? And B, why can't I just rewire things so it functions perfectly? Most people are so unaware of their physical movements that they don't even know that their hips or their pelvis is locked and they're walking funny and they're pain-free. So it's like, does the hardware they installed make a difference? So that's the kind of brain work and framework you lay when it's something that's so severe that you're like, whoa, if I'm 40, if I want to have kids, or if I'm 50, I won't be able to pick them up, or I won't be able to do this. So you use whatever it is possible. I filled my days when I was resting or rehabbing with like videos of Michael Jordan playing ball. And you talk to your body, say, hey, that's how we're going to move after. Like, look what he did. And like all these inspirational things, right? You watch this stuff, isolated, disconnected from people. You can't talk about it until it's over, because you don't want any negative stuff coming into your day. Because if somebody tells you you're broken for life, maybe I won't work as hard at rehab because I'll be sad for at least a couple hours until I shake that off. So like that's the kind of some things when people are working on big projects, they kind of isolate. That's how we do it at least. And then afterwards, when I would walk through a crowd, nobody even knew. I'd see a friend from high school, they wouldn't know. So it's okay, that was my goal. I don't want you to know and I don't want to be in pain. So yeah.
But then you had a second accident, is that correct?
With the yeah. Car? Yeah, yeah. So like I was visiting my brother in Toronto. I have no idea why I came in twos. Sometimes you get things come in threes, but we got whacked pretty hard the second time. And after that, you know what? The third year, it was 4 days apart. In the third year, I stayed home. That whole week of July, I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying home. And we got through it. It was just it was a setback. Obviously, it's probably more traumatic than anything. Yeah, but we got through that aspect of things, which was nice. We didn't compound it too badly. Cars are very safe. They have great airbags. So better than motorcycles. So yeah, after that, I kind of just fell in love with, I was missing my community that I had developed over the course of that. But then when I found Wind, it kind of filled in all these boxes that I was missing. So yeah.
So then you started windsurfing with your brother, right? And yep. Eventually you got on Foil. Can you tell us a story about that?
So that's another kind of a funny one. I've been windsurfing for so many years. My brother would try to get me to kite and I was like, I'm not doing this sport. So then we kind of have this little fun rivalry between the two of us. And eventually my friend Tom, who was the co-host of the podcast when it started, he was like, hey, this new foiling thing is out. I can get you gear. I'm working at a store. It's dirt cheap. Somebody just came in on commission. Do you want it? I was like, okay, fine. So he gave me a 30-second lesson. I started windsurf foiling. So I think I was up in, it was a slingshot 84. So I was up in like 10, 15 minutes, but just because it was windsurfing, all I had to do is go fast and it lifted. I couldn't turn, couldn't do anything, but it was the quietest, most peaceful thing that I had felt in a while because it's just you pop up and it goes silent. So that it was pretty fun. And then switching over to wing foiling after the windsurf training was relatively straightforward because windsurf foiling, for those who haven't tried it, is actually like going straight is fine, but tacking and jibing on foil it's like I find it way more difficult than wing foiling because you got the rig there and it's scary. So yeah.
So that is so cool. And then you fell in love with wing foiling, I guess, because it's easy, it's light, it's...
I was like, I've always been a dream of being a surfer, right? I think that's in a lot of our hearts and stuff, watching Slater and some of those other guys rip up. And I was kind of landlocked a little bit. Like we got a river in Ottawa and I'd spent a lot of time on the West Coast with my brother. So we didn't have crazy waves. Like Tofino waves are still relatively small in the spring and summer and stuff. So it was like this gave us the feeling of surfing in smaller conditions. And I kind of just got hooked on just trying to become once again better at something and fell in love with that aspect. And the Great Lakes, like Lake Ontario in Canada, you got some large swell and good fetch and stuff. So you can surf for a while and it's phenomenal. So it slowly started to replace a bit of my windsurfing. Unless it was a very good day of waves, then I would do that. But if it was mediocre, I would just be on the foil all the time. So,
you still yeah. windsurf?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I still miss it. I'm heading to Maui after this. I'm looking forward to, after 10 years of windsurfing, I'm looking forward to finally windsurfing Kanaha and getting some waves in. But yeah, I still do love it. It's just, my gear was kind of all over the country. So I didn't bring it here. So I'm kind of forced to work on foiling a little bit more, but that's all right.
Damn. And how are the conditions there in Mexico now? Like, are you surfing, downwinding, wing foiling? Just I guess it's super windy.
Yeah, it's been a really windy year so far. I met Peter, a buddy of mine, who's an instructor for elevation kiteboarding last night. And he said it's an El Niño year, I guess. So it's been windy pretty much 5 days a week. Today, I think yesterday, anywhere from 15 to 25. Knots most days. And so I'm about 5 kilometers or 6 kilometers up from South Beach. So it's kind of like a big L bay. So I'm like positioned up here, up pretty far north. So I downwind to South Beach most times and I'll play in the waves and then I'll come back up. So it's about a 10K return trip and it's some decent size swell. Like it can build up to shoulder, head, above. Some days are smaller, but it's still a pretty good time if you think about it. It's Great Lake-esque is what I like to say. Like it's bigger than some of the smaller like Nitnat Lake or some of the small choppy lakes that we go on. But yeah, it's pretty decent.
That is so cool. And you always in your podcast, you say, if you're in the area, hit us up. You give classes as well. Wing Fung, is that correct?
Yeah, I started teaching 3-4 years ago. There's a couple schools in Vancouver Island that I taught for, kind of subcontract work. And here I'm doing the same thing. It's kind of fun hanging out with people and kind of passing on that. And then trying to, what it really forces you to do is analyze your own skills too. And I'm an intermediate rider, like I'm not doing anything crazy, but still trying to help somebody stand up on the board for the first time. There's so many different ways of doing that. So it's another little mental challenge. And it's kind of a fun aspect of things. You never know where that sport's going to take them. So it's a cool thing to do on the side for sure.
And you ride north at the moment.
Yeah. So how we set up our podcast for sponsors is we didn't want to be pigeonholed into riding contracts or kind of any of that sort of thing where we have to ride a gear, have to create content for them. We put out media kits and offered different tier levels and said, hey, obviously everybody knows that this costs money. It's not free. Riverside is not free. Hosting isn't free. Gear isn't free. So it's like, hey, we have to find a way to fund this a little bit so that it's fair for all of us. And North was pretty much the one of the main brands that was A, the most supportive of the community initiatives. Because I talked to Mike Raper, who's a brand manager, and he was just over the moon excited about an initiative, and he was very supportive of us. And so hats off to North for being so supportive of such a small podcast like a year ago. And because it's a very competitive industry to get advertising dollars or any kind of dollars thrown your way. It's extremely difficult. We ride whatever gear. So if you're a company that wants to donate gear to us so that we can ride it, it'll be seen on socials. We don't ride exclusively, but I love the North foils I have. I'm riding their Surf Series now. It's good stuff. I'm going to upgrade to their high modulus mass and I think get down to a smaller surf foil. So going to be able to start geeking out on their gear now, which is fun.
That is so cool. Let's talk about your podcast.
Sure.
I saw like 4 different podcasts or chapters, maybe. There's the Wing Life podcast. There's the Wing Foil World Tour GWA show with Tom Hartman. There's the Gear Talk show and the live show with Glenn and Damo. How is that interconnected?
Well, there's a couple podcasters that I like to listen to. And I find that their sense of developing, it's like they're having a beer with the boys. And so... And that particular podcaster has 3 or 4 different shows. So he'll have the same guy on talk about one specific topic and the same person come on talk about another topic. While we were trying to figure out how to make us more attractive without bikinis and stuff like that, we were like, well, let's figure out a way to do it. So let's create shows of different topics and have our regular episodes. And then we were interested in the Pro Tour because we think it's a really good thing for kids. And so it's like, why not see if we can talk to Tom and create a show around that? And the Gwen and Damo show was, we were all instructors and we're like, is there a way that we can give to the community in this way? Like maybe fill that void. And so we're always looking for our next show idea to throw in there to offer our audience as much variety of content as possible. Like the podcaster that I listen to that I think it's really fun. So that's why we did that.
All right. And, I listened to episode number 1. When was the last time you listened to your episode number 1?
So my brother and I listened to that one a while back and he's like, what is this? AA for foiling? Like what? This is hilarious. So yeah, I know like it wasn't supposed to turn into, honestly, it wasn't supposed to turn into anything. Like it was just 6 of us and I was filming it. I've recorded the first, must have been 10-15 episodes from my car using cell phone data on Zoom. It was hilarious, but it started to pick up I think we got our first pro or something. It was like, whatever. Like, I'm stubborn. I don't want to quit. Yeah, it was pretty hilarious there. It was just all of us round tabling about why we love foiling.
Because your podcast has evolved so much compared to these first episodes. And I can imagine when you started, you just wanted to talk to your friends and, yeah, maybe record it. But then when was the time you actually thought, well, this is a show that people are going to listen to?
So a buddy of mine in Ottawa started a health-based podcast. Like, out of my whole accident scene, we realized in Canada that finding healthcare professionals is actually really hard. Like, if you want to dive down the rabbit hole, and if you want to find a health practitioner through a service, an amenity, an injury, a location, like, Google allows you to search by location and profession, but nothing else. So we developed a website called healthlocator.ca, which we're actively building. So that was kind of that mainstream things from there. But what happened was, is I saw a Reddit thread and I saw a Reddit thread of like, oh yeah, like, here's some wing foiling podcast. You can listen to Luke Morris podcast, but it's so poorly done that like, I listened to the first 15 minutes, but like, bro, I'd listen to it, but it's just, it's, they don't put any money into it. It's like, fuck. So I was like, man, like, I have to improve this. So then I contacted my friend in Indonesia, who's a professional videographer, who's on the team now. He does our audio. I said, dude, what do I do? Like, what? So we found Riverside. I found a mic. I paid a friend of mine who's a professional podcaster, I don't know, a good chunk of change. And I took consulting and we tried to come up with a story. I don't know why this was so terrifying to launch this thing. Every single step was scary. But we just kept hedging along and we improved it because my buddy who started the health-based podcast back to Health Locator was getting no attention at all. He was getting maybe 5 to 10 views or 10 plays a month. And we were already 10xing that. And I was like, I don't understand. Like, people listen to this. So like, and we slowly increased the quality to match that. And then we didn't approach anybody, until like we wanted to, my buddy who is our audio master would literally send me long audio messages slamming me for the poor quality of this or the poor quality of that and said, bro, lift it up or quit. So I was like, your videos are boring. This is terrible. So like, and now after whatever, 2 years that I've seen some traction and people listen and I'm starting to getting to know more of the brand managers, getting more friends in the industry. We're obviously trying our best to increase it. Like our last GWA YouTube video was I took 3-4 hours to add B-roll at night. And it's the same thing with some other episodes. Like Riverside does an amazing job editing. We don't need to. But what we do now is we'll just add B-roll, but it still takes 3 to 5 hours if you want to do it properly and find a good clip and put it in there, plus the recording time, plus the other time. So let's say you're in 8 to 10 hours per episode. Because of what I've seen, which was extremely frustrating at the start, but now I understand, was that YouTube and Instagram, everything has been put forth in this free, like everything is free. So creators who are putting in a lot of time, getting compensation from the community themselves is a lot harder than I would have initially like thought. Like a couple bucks here and there is actually quite hard to get. You actually have to be pretty sensational to get somebody, and then you got to hire them if they actually give you money. So all that stuff is kind of cool that we don't really talk about, but like kudos to you guys as well, because it takes a long time to edit something and put out something of quality. And when you see a Reddit thread and I answered it, I say, hey guys, like if anybody wants to donate me $50, like I could buy a mic or do this or whatever, but like I don't want to put in too much time because I didn't know where the future would lay or where it would get me to, or I assumed it would maybe eventually get me a job or something or whatever, maybe an interesting career or talk to friends and shut it down. But it seems to be picking up its own momentum, so we'll just keep going with it.
That is super cool. Great. So. Yeah. You do that B-roll, the editing yourself. You said you have someone in the audio. There's Frank we talked to. There's Matthias for guest relations, which I always hear at the end of your podcast. Who else is on your team?
It's the four of us. It's the four guys. The show belongs to all of us. Each one of us contributes equally in their own way. The consulting hours I spent with Frank and Matt knows so many people, but the amount of time he takes and dedicates to reaching out to people, coming up with little bios of them so that I can read over a bit of information, so I can just kind of store it in my mind and let the conversation happen. It's the four guys there. Obviously, friends and family too. Whoever listens, they'll shout out and say, hey, like, you won't hear from your buddies on the beach forever. And they'll listen to one episode and say, yeah, that one was good. So you just have to be happy with whatever people listen to. And that doesn't really bug me much anymore. I think it did at the start because we were hoping to survive. But now that we realize we can just keep recording, it's fine.
And were you always interested in the numbers, like this video, or it got listened to so many times? Or are you just like, I'm happy to talk to people and doesn't matter what happens?
It wasn't really. I was just surprised at the start that that the numbers grew. Like, and that's why. Because it was AA for foiling at the start. So it's like, and that's like, I think for these kind of projects, passion projects, if I would redo it, I would have just like, not, because I am a person that wants to learn quickly and excel and do very well quickly, is just to like kind of let that go a little bit. And you know what? Every once in a while, a project does what it's supposed to do, regardless of what you want it to do. It's outside of your control. So like, and a lot of these projects, and I find that a lot of, like, there was a consultant that did some work for the brands, and Instagram and social media was contributing to 2 or 3 or 5% of their sales. Yes, it helps with brand recognition. Yes, it helps with that. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't talk to the person on the beach. And that's normally how people buy their gear. Like, within a small community, you're like, because I converted probably 2 or 3 or 4 people that were messaging me from Ottawa and said, hey, how do you like North? Like, how are those foils? So I said, well, they just happened to give it, like, send over gear because they believed in us. I'm not hard selling them, but I like them. I ride them. If I didn't like them, I wouldn't necessarily ride it. So like that aspect of things, I think, is important for all of us because we're like a connection piece. Everybody looks up to a high-end athlete, but they're not going to be able to message a high-end athlete and get their feedback on gear because they have so many other commitments. So this aspect of things is kind of cool. I think we play a fairly valuable role. And I think it's only starting, to be honest.
I also believe that people, like normal customers, can relate better to like intermediate athletes, like average riders, rather than athletes. Because yes, like if we have to be honest, we cannot base our foil choice off of what an athlete, a professional athlete is riding. Because most probably that athlete is going to be able to, this is going to crush it with everything, right? So yeah, I agree with them with the fact that companies see the value in creators more probably than athletes. Yeah,
it's an upward battle, and just getting more and more meetings and slowly introducing it, because it's an added area where I think is valuable. We're not going to replace some of the athletes that obviously have millions of views on every reel. We're not replacing that, but we can add that connection piece, because if somebody's learning how to foil and they look at me foil and I'm riding strapless and doing whatever, and I'm not doing backflips or triple jumps or whatever, they'll be like, oh, okay, so what is it that helped you? Because exactly like you were saying, Gail, like a professional driver could ride a Civic and still crush like a little tiny broken down thing and still crushes in the corners, and we got a Ferrari. Like, it doesn't matter. So that's kind of the same approach. And I think that's our value, is being able to have our ears tapped to the community. Because a lot of brand managers get to travel and they go to destinations and they get to connect with the community. So I think that's a cool thing that we can do by having a little bit of our ears on the ground, and we can let our opinions be known a little bit, which I think is really, it's valuable for everybody. And we're pretty cost effective in the long run. We're very cost effective, so that's kind of cool.
Totally agree. Plus, now with your podcast, as I learned now, it started as a hobby, but it kind of became like kind of a company. Professional, you've got this perfect website. You have to pay people as well. When did you realize that it was going to be that big and it's a real thing now?
I think the website. Oh, that was a frustrating piece. I was looking around for a website. That thing must have taken me 20, 30 hours to design. I think it was just like, it was just the next hook. So it was just like, I like bouldering and climbing. So it's like, when you're on the wall or anything, all I see is that next piece. So we just kind of keep going forward, I guess. I don't even know if it's a real thing yet, but I just keep, I keep going forward and we stay humble in it and hopefully it keeps going. But yeah, all of that stuff kind of was just, it felt natural. Once again, I had friends that, that said, hey, you need this, you need this. And so one of my friends owns Snowgo. He's a Canadian distributor for Snowgo in Canada. So it's like this, almost like there's, it's three skis and you, it's like a mountain bike for skiing. So he was like, when I was at his place that weekend, he was like, man, like you need something, like you need to trademark your name or do whatever. Cause he was trying to grow his business. So I spent countless hours building that website and we haven't touched it in a bit, but, yeah, it just like, it made sense. And we wanted to do have a YouTube presence, even though it's not massive. But like, we want to try to cover all those angles and see where it goes. If it turns into a career that can enable us to travel and cover events and do some journalism work around the world and meet more people, then why not give it a go? It still stays like a weekend evening project, but still like 8 hours an episode still takes quite a bit of time. So yeah.
That is so cool. I have a few practical questions about the podcast. If you may, how long usually is it between recording and releasing?
That depends on our booking and rescheduling. Same with that. I had to reschedule once because I was pretty sick. It's the same thing. So sometimes what we like to do is have 4 to 6 episodes ahead. But sometimes it's 3 days ahead or a week ahead. It all depends on people's schedules. If we're working with a brand, it depends on editing. It depends on getting final approval. It depends on a whole bunch of different things. So there's a lot of pieces behind the scenes. And it also depends if the computer works or if something doesn't crash or if we don't have to contact Riverside for support because the video disappeared. All that kind of thing. Or in Ottawa, I drive 2 hours return trip to record an episode because I don't have good internet. So I drive to my buddy's place in a neighboring city. We set up a little office there. Give a shout out to Greg Wright for being such a supportive friend. And regardless of what he's doing, he lets me close the door and record. That's how a lot of our episodes, if you see a starboard board in the background, it's his place. And it's, yeah, it's an hour, 40 minutes or so return trip just to go record. That's not editing. Wow. It's not uploading. So I was like, we're silly dedicated.
Yeah. And in terms of technical questions, I want to know if you learned you're incredibly fluent when you're speaking. Did you learn it in the podcast or was it like something else in your life that you were already that fluent?
Well, Edwin Frondoso, so he runs the Business Leadership Podcast. That's my good buddy that does that professionally. He's worked with, had business executives on from all the major banks in Canada. I took his consulting course and he spent a lot of time working through with me to kind of help hone those skills and how to write a story and how to talk and that. And then like, obviously I'll put it like, I do listen to Rogan and I find that Rogan's podcasts in like North America, he, regardless if you believe in the messaging or not, his ability to sit there in a room and to kind of cultivate that sense of community. And you just want to have a beer and sit and watch and listen to the guest. That's what I wanted to try to replicate. So I listened to countless hours and studied him. Like the hardest thing at the start was to try to figure out a transition word for the first sentence. It's like, hey, how's it going? And then what? Right? That took forever. So I studied him as much as possible and tried to mimic his style of podcasting as much as I could, because I felt out of all of them, he was the one that captivated his guests captivated my attention the most. So that's kind of how the whole thing spurred from there. It's Edwin's consulting was amazing. And then I just would listen to his podcast and say, like, why did I listen to like 3 hours of this? Like, what the heck? How did this happen? And it was just like, I felt like I was sitting there having a beer and just hanging out and just learning from this new person. So that's kind of how it all kind of is continuing to evolve, I guess.
It's really, plus with your podcast, I have like the feeling like I'm there as well. And your voice, super, super great for listening to it. Really deep voice, and your sentences are really well thought through.
There's a lot of editing that goes in that too.
Have you ever had an episode where you thought like, I'm not going to really release that one? That was not a good episode.
To be honest, those episodes, like, so Riverside, like, we're going to give a little secrets away here. Riverside does help us with some video editing now, which probably saves us 4 hours of time before I would have to cut every single scene. As you go through the episode, you have transition words, Oz, this kind of stuff.
I have a lot of those.
What happened is I would cut out every single one of those in post. That is what makes it amazingly fluent, is if I say or like or mm-hmm, or I breathe in, I clean it up just ever so slightly.
Wow.
So that is time. And I don't talk a ton. Like, I try to get my guests to talk a lot. So that helps. But yes, like, it's, we're not altering conversations or anything, but we're going to edit out, like, if it's a little thing, I edit stuff out like that. So it makes it a lot more fluent. And the degree of editing that goes into other podcasts, and it allowed me to see how a movie is made, how a documentary is made. Like, I didn't realize I could edit out something and made it sound nicer. Some athletes thought it was just fluid conversation. No, like, we if there's anything said that you don't like, if there's anything said by accident, if your sponsor comes back and says, hey, like, I hope you didn't talk about the new gear, like, we're more than happy to work with you. So that's what makes it a bit more fluid. But yeah, I appreciate it.
But you never had an episode where you said, that was not good, I'm not gonna.
No, that. It was for fun. It was just like, whatever. 3 people listened to it. 5 people listened to it. We're gonna put it out. There's some that had a crazy amount of technical difficulties because the internet was so bad or something happened. But I don't think we had any. Some of them I thought was like, oh, I did horrible on that one. Like, I did not. I wasn't able to connect with my guests. I wasn't able to get them excited. But. No, I think we released everything.
Do you listen to your episodes once they're out?
Yes, I had to. I did that for a long period of time to improve my skills as well. So that's one thing that a lot of comedians, podcasters do as well, is they'll critique themselves. So I would listen to it and it's like, oh, that sounds terrible. Like, how could I have improved that transition sentence? And it goes back into me studying other podcasters. It's like, how do you transition from here? Where would you have taken this question or this conversation? So I had to do it by listening to my own material. And then Frank and Matt listened to every single episode as part of their jobs. And then what they do is they let me know whether they liked it. If I don't hear from them, maybe I could have done better. but when they said, man, like, that was a great episode. So, okay, that's the bar. And how was I able to connect? I just want the, because a lot of people that are coming on are first timers and they're nervous. So I just want to cultivate that fun and freedom in them to be excited. So maybe if only their immediate family, let's say it's a 14-year-old athlete, right? And maybe only their 10 friends listen to it. Well, I want that experience for their 10 friends to be super fun. So when they look back when they're 60, they'll be like, oh yeah, I was on this podcast when I was a pro. And like, that was really fun to do. Like, it was a good experience. So that's what I try to bring into my mindset to come into these episodes as well.
That is really cool. Who was your favorite guest and why?
A lot of people are going to get offended.
We've had a ton so far. Actually, a really fun episode that I just had was Cash Borzola yesterday. We talked about his new, which is coming out, I think, in a few weeks. We just had like a talked about anything and anything under the sun. It wasn't a scripted about winging, but talked about. So that he's a really fun person to chat with because he just kind of goes off. Willow Tonkin River was also a really good episode because he was just so amazingly stoked and excited. But I've had so many fun conversations. It's super hard to narrow it down. It is funny though, from guests based on where they live. I don't know if you guys have found this as well, but the closer to Germany, Switzerland, kind of over there, guests appreciate more structure. So questions ahead of time, organize, follow through the list. Sometimes I read the list, but if you get closer to like Australia or New Zealand or Canada or the US, they're like, no, bro, back off. Let me talk. So it's so funny. So you'll be talking to them. All I need to do is just, like, you know, just like throw a ball to the left, and then they'll take it, and then I just get to listen and laugh and enjoy. So it yeah, sorry, that was a run on, but anyways, no real favorite guests. Everybody kind of brings unique energy to the table, which is fun.
And I have another question about the guests. And we've just recorded an episode with Lukas Schuler, Foil Only. And he's going to be actually be the next episode. And then today I saw, oh, you got to have the same episode. How is
That's
it for
cool.
you? Because there are a bunch of foiling podcasts. How is it for you if you see, oh, he's been on another show, or he's going to be on another show as well? Do you feel like that's one against each other? Is like, oh, well, whatever.
I won't lie. At the start, when we were trying to figure out where we were going to do, and I have, so my whole family, my brother's a Red Seal carpenter. He's been doing his profession for a long time. He built up his skills over 20 years. My other good friend is an amazing professional kitchen cabinet maker installer, right? So they're all about just slow sequential steps. But in personal training or in other stuff, people demand almost instant changes. So you try to find shortcuts to help them achieve their goals quicker than that. So in this, I was a little jealous and a little competitive at the start. I would look around and see how others were doing and stuff, but then I didn't realize it's just slow and sequential steps will market your own niche. The people that love your show will love your show. They'll listen to ours, but there's like how many billions of humans on the planet? And we got listeners from Zimbabwe and all these little tiny countries from sporadic all over the world. Like, we'll be the top like sports podcast in a little country that I've never heard of for a week, right? So I realized that it's like, why don't we approach it more holistically? And Matt and Damo are very good at that because they're all about it. They didn't have to collab with us. They didn't have to work with us. But they are like, well, if we do this for the community, let's do it for all of us. So they help like frame my mind towards that. It's competitive when you're selling gear. So obviously companies have to survive. They got families on the line. They have to feed them. But for us, not so much anymore. I'm stoked that they might come out and that more people get to listen to that, because he has a pretty cool story, like how all of that started for him. And I would have never thought of bungee foiling, but it's interesting to learn to as many people how they got into this.
Absolutely. That's like, it's not only your guest that makes the podcast, but even like the host can take out of that of the guest different things. So it's always, as you said, like the podcaster, that the host that makes the podcast different, even though the guest is the same. Yeah,
that's one thing. That was it was Max from Germany, I believe, was one of our first. He has a fairly popular, I think he helps people learn German, that he launched his own or Instagram channel as well. And he reached out and said, oh, wow, this is so nice that I listened to a podcast that's about the guest. It's not about you. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I was trying to do that. I didn't know. But the goal of the conversation is for you to have a good time, for you to go and tell your partner you had a good time. Then it was a successful podcast. So that, and I think that goes on to Cash, is because I was Tash yesterday. That's like, are you hyper competitive, or how do you become better, or how do you do these things? It's like, well, my focus is on fun and enjoyment with my community, and I get better through positivity. I don't get better through necessarily the other aspects. And it was such a mind blowing. It's like, well, you're like one of the probably the best foiler right now, and the stuff you're doing is insane, and it just builds on fun. And I was like, oh, okay. So that's what we're trying to mimic as well, but it's not always easy.
And maybe a last question for me, at least, because I'm almost done with my list. Can you tell us some numbers? Like you said before that you might be the best sports podcast in some country. How many listeners do you have in like general episodes?
This is the $1 million question. I don't know if we can put this out on the air. especially when it's coming time for contract renewals. I can't say it, but what I can say is that it surprised us. And there's a couple software we can connect afterwards and talk to Frank, but we can talk to Frank about it and see what they look like. And there's even comparison tools where we can compare all of the podcasts together. So we've been able to look at that and get it. Obviously, it's not 5 million, which we would love, but the numbers are still growing and they're still respectable. Like, here's one way to look at it, which is what we have to talk to brands about, is that if somebody listens to 75% of a 60-minute conversation, whatever, that's 45 minutes if I did my math right, how many Instagram reels do you watch in 45 minutes? 1,000. How many YouTube videos do you watch? What kind of a relationship do you build with that potential client? What's the likelihood of them buying gear from you? So all of those things helps contribute to our kind of ecosystem of being valuable. It's because they hang out, people hang out with us and they actually send us a comment and they hang out with us for a long time. Long form content, and especially the demographics, which I can share, is like anywhere from 30 to 65. YouTube is mainly 50 to 65. So, and they're primarily men. We're trying to, doing very hard to try to bring on more women guests and try to include, because we want to have our distribution a little bit more even. But they're primarily people who are looking to buy gear, connect. So, and we're not getting a lot of 15-year-olds listening, unless obviously they're listening based on their friends that are on the show. So all of that stuff is interesting for us. And just the spread of around the world, we didn't think would happen. We didn't think there'd be 200 countries stemming in. There might be 5 countries like US, Canada, Australia, UK that are main ones. But then you have like 150 other ones that have 0.5% of your viewers. And it's like, that still contributes to quite a few people. So that's kind of cool.
That is super cool. And for me, I'm pretty much done with my list. Gal, do you have anything to add?
No, I just want to say that your story, what you go through, what you built after that, after the incidents, and also like your way to go through life is absolutely inspiring for me, that I'm probably a little kid compared to you and Matt. So thank you very much for inspiring me. I will absolutely listen a couple of times to this episode to really process all the information that you gave out, because fantastic. Thank you very much again for being up.
No, I just want to say thanks a lot for doing that community piece in your part of the world as well. I think it's really important. And I think taking time out of your days, you guys could be doing something completely different. And that's where the energy that Frank and Matt and Steph bring to our team is they motivate us to do something for other people and to make our experience more fun. You never know how foiling could change somebody's life if we look at it that way. From what I've went through, windsurfing completely changed my life. It gave me something that was only for myself. Like, it was something that I could take. I didn't have to barter or convince or fight or do anything with another human being. I could go and have fun and push myself on my own, which is something that foiling does for all of us. So I think it's such a special sport and it does so much that it's like, well, why not? So thanks a lot, guys, for doing what you're doing. It was a pleasure being on and chatting away. So I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Just one absolutely last thing. Your podcast has evolved, right? And maybe there's something else that, how are you thinking about keeping the fire going?
So I think we're going to do a bit of a drop, I guess, here, eh? We have talked to several people and they kind of put a little bit of an idea in us that we should expand a little bit. So from wing life, even though we talk about downwind foiling, parawing, we talk about everything, we're going to be rebranding in January to Foil Life, which will include kite, windsurf, wing, absolutely everything, all the new foil disciplines, surf foil, as a means of being able to expand our guests and bring on more people and not just be 100% wing focused. That is what we're thinking and that's what we're doing. Frank, this morning, he sent over, he said, I'm working on different logos and we're going to slowly inch that towards. I guess we're 3 weeks away from that. We'll slowly make, we're going to put that on our Instagram soon. So we've just been doing some of the background research for it so far, but it'll be a fun name change. And after 2 years or 2+ years, we're going to rename it and see where it goes from there.
That is super cool. Well, thank you very much. I already said it. I'm saying it again because it's the end of the episode. Next episode is going to be with Lukas Schuler at Foil Only. Super interesting guy. Spectacular things he does on his foil. And if you like this kind of show, we're not that big yet. No sponsors. So if you think about sponsoring a little podcast team, do it. So if not, we have a Patreon as well that you can find, and you'll find Gael at Gael Daniele. You'll find me at Matt on Foil, and your Insta handle, Luke.
It's more_Luke for my personal one, which is huge. I think I'm up to 250 followers now. Watch out!
Come on.
And then our podcast one is Wing Life Podcast. So make sure to follow us. Our YouTube channel just got monetized, which is pretty exciting. So we're slowly starting to grow that thing. It's at 1,000, it's still tiny, but we're going to be covering anybody out there. We're going to be covering AWSI in September at Hood River. So if you want to, that's where a majority of people listened and tuned in to the YouTube. So Wing Life Podcast across all the boards. We will let you know when it switches over, but nothing changes. It's just a name change. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you much for taking your time, man. Really cool. And yeah, all the listeners, the viewers, see you in the next one. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.